Our first reading this morning is from the book of Acts, chapter 16, starting at verse 9. The actual page number in this Bible is 147, so the one in your bulletin may not be correct. During the night, Paul had a vision. There stood a man of Macedonia pleading with him and saying, "Come over to Macedonia and help us." When he had seen the vision, we immediately tried to cross over to Macedonia, being convinced that God had called us to proclaim the good news to them. We set sail from Troas and took a straight course to Samothrace. The following day to Neapolis, and from there to Philippi, which is a leading city of the district of Macedonia and a Roman colony. We remained in the city for some days. On the Sabbath day, we went outside the gate by the river, where we supposed it was a place of prayer, and we sat down and spoke to the women who had gathered there. A certain woman named Lydia, a worshiper of God, was listening to us. She was from the city of Thyatira and a dealer in purple cloth. The Lord opened her heart to listen eagerly to what was said by Paul. When she and her household were baptized, she urged us, saying, "If you have judged me to be faithful to the Lord, come and stay at my home." And she prevailed upon us. The second reading is from the book of John, chapter 14, starting at verse 23. Jesus answered him, "Those who love me will keep my word, and my Father will love them, and we will come to them and make our home with them. Whoever does not love me does not love my words, and the word that you hear is not mine, but is from the Father who sent me. I have said these things to you while I am still with you, but the Advocate, the Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send in my name, will teach you everything and remind you of all that I have said to you. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. I do not give to you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not let them be afraid. You have heard me say to you, 'I am going away, and I am coming to you.' If you loved me, you would rejoice that I am going to the Father, because the Father is greater than I. And now I have told you this before it occurs, so that when it does occur, you may believe." This is God's word for us.
Oh, God, hear us, O Lord. This has been quite a week, hasn't it? I thought long and hard, and I can't think of a time when the city was hit harder, at least not in my memory. And it's pretty short, but it's all I got. I also don't recall a time when I was prouder to be part of this community here in Nashville, of this people, of this church. This was in many ways the worst week and a very fine week. So what do you do with that as a preacher? Last Sunday I was the only one here, and I had a sermon, and I didn't know what to do with it. Today you're all here, and I don't have a sermon. I didn't want to write one, because this week was such a fine week, and because the gospel was happening this week in ways that I could never put into words. So what I chose to do instead, this being Mother's Day, was to share with you a letter that I wrote to my mom. So you'll get to read her mail. And then when I'm done, what we'll do is simply take a little time for some stories, because some amazing things have been happening. KK has already shared some of them, where suddenly heaven breaks out in places where we thought all hell had broken loose. Marvelous things have happened, and I've asked some of you to just share some of your experiences with us this morning. So when I'm finished, Jim Carls will come up and talk for a little while, and then Savannah Lyle will talk to us, and Lisa Matthews. And when we're done with that, I think it would be very appropriate that we just spend a little more time just in huddles of, you know, 5 or 6 or 7, just where you are, and just share with each other what this week has been like for you. Because, again, as Keke said earlier, some of the folks that you've shared your stories with may already be tired of hearing about it, but you still want to talk about it. Your heart's still full. And so we'll minister to each other, just speaking and listening and sharing our experiences. So I'll go first, and here's my letter to Mom. And Mom in German is Mama, so it starts, "Dear Mama, you sounded worried when you called. You had seen the pictures on the evening news, pictures of a city underwater, and you didn't know if we had just moved to a new house only to watch it disappear in a flood. You sounded worried, and I was happy to assure you that we were all okay. I didn't have time to chat, though, as we usually do. We were still trying to get updates about all our members and their families, about friends and neighbors, while working long hours to get the water out of the church basement in Fellowship Hall. Imagine how many mothers were worried. The ones with small children to take care of, who had to leave their homes just to keep them safe. And the ones living in another part of town or out of town, who kept trying to call and the phones just wouldn't work. Chad and Sarah just had their first child back in March. And their home, their first home, had 5 feet of water in it. That's more than 1.5 meters. They lost everything. Furniture, clothes, their car, guitars, everything. Even the pictures from their wedding and from the trip they took last year on their first anniversary. They weren't at home when the waters rose, and when they were finally able to get to their house, they were shocked. But opening the front door, they found their dog alive and well, sitting on its favorite spot on that soggy, muddy couch, and they were just happy to see it. Julio and Ashley had just moved to Nashville from New Jersey to make a fresh start. They lived in a trailer, rent to own, and they worked hard to save some money. They want to get married in June. When the water began to rise, they only had seconds to grab their dog and the cat and get in the car. They escaped with nothing but the clothes on their backs. Everything else gone. There are hundreds, thousands of stories like these. Stories of belongings buried in mud and memories washed away. Stories of escape and loss. And stories of death. There was this elderly couple on their way to church early on Sunday morning in Belmead. Perhaps they didn't realize just how deep the water was on the road and how treacherous the current. They tried and managed to get out of the car, but they didn't have the strength to make it to higher ground. They both drowned. The one comfort I find in that story is that they died together. That's what I would want, I think, if I had a choice. Losing a spouse is hard enough, but being the surviving spouse in such tragic circumstances seems unbearable to me. And there's another story, one that will be told for years. It's a story with hundreds and thousands of chapters. It's the story of this wonderful city and the people who call it home. It's the story of bass boats and canoes turned into rescue vessels, of neighbors carrying neighbors on their backs across roads turned into rivers, of strangers risking their lives to pull strangers from cars trapped in the current. It's a story of families opening their homes so their neighbors could spend the night in safety and enjoy the small comforts of a hot meal shared around a table. It's the story of women, men, and children helping their neighbors carry their belongings to the curb and rip out wet carpet, sheetrock, and insulation. Dear Mama, you taught us that it's hard to tell what exactly the church is, but that we would love being part of it when it happens. I can tell you, church has been happening in Nashville big time this past few days. The gospel wasn't preached from pulpits, and God knows there are plenty of pulpits in Nashville, but embodied in places of need. I can almost see you sitting at the dining room table, reading this and nodding. We can talk all we want, but the gospel needs hands and feet to be known. Hands with gloves on them, hands holding shovels and hammers, hands giving a cup of ice-cold lemonade and a sandwich to tired workers, arms hugging the brokenhearted, feet wading through water and mud, faces unafraid to cry and to smile. Dear Mama, I don't know what it's like to be a mother, but I know what it means to me to have you as mine. You have taught your children well. You have taught us that life flourishes when we share it, and that God desires for all life to flourish. Nashville is on the Cumberland River, and the river is a stream of blessing for this city. In just 3 days, though, after rains that broke every record, the river and its many tributaries, every creek, every brook and ditch, flooded and brought devastation and suffering to our community. The Cumberland has crested. The waters are receding, and in many places, the destruction is only now becoming visible. But there's another river flowing through this city. It is a mighty river, deep and wide, its waters clear as crystal, its currents gentle and still. It's a river of compassion and generosity, a river of neighborliness and of healing mercy, a river inspiring service, prayers, and new songs. May its waters continue to rise, and may it wash the muddy places and heal the broken hearts. God is in the midst of the city. It shall not be overthrown. Happy Mother's Day. Love, Thomas. So now that I barely made my way through this, I ask Jim Carls to come and share with us his reflection on this week. And then Savannah and Lisa.
No sermon, huh? No sermon, huh? I'd like to thank Andrea for ruining my sinuses a few minutes ago. And the kids, too. The dictionary defines the word line first as the shortest distance between two points. However, there are many other definitions of the word, and lines figure heavily in my memories of last weekend's storms. We live in a neighborhood near McCrory Lane, that's out west, bounded by I-40, 100-foot hills, and the Harpeth River. There are two roads into the area, and if it rains a bit heavily, one tends to flood. My two teenage boys and their permanent weekend guest, Joey, were there, plus a parade of neighborhood riffraff that tends to infest the house whenever the boys are there. With a 100% chance of rain predicted, I decided to stay home, keeping an eye on the internet's weather radar. It showed a rainbow line of thunderstorms coming from the southwest. That line on my computer screen is now burned into my memory. Although it looked like a typical storm front, it was moving along its length, and we now know that it wasn't a storm front. It was really a storm drain floating above us. The forecast was wrong. The chance of rain was 150%. Even though the rain continued, Nashville had no precedent for the amount of rain that was coming, and without the high winds that would prompt me to switch to a TV station, the typical distractions of a Saturday night kept us from realizing that the Weather Channel was showing a horror movie, the kind where the whole audience screams, "Run!" while we, the clueless extras, laughed and sang around our electronic campfires, oblivious of the creeping menace down by the creek. Sunday morning, I received an email that church had been canceled, and I thought, well, I guess there must have been a few problems here and there. But that afternoon, with the rains dying away, the power and phones inexplicably went down. I had books to read and window light, but the boys' tortilla chip and cookie-fueled cycle of recording music, playing video games, and watching movies instantly ceased. I am still amazed at what happened next, because they rapidly shifted to a cycle of playing board games and walking around the neighborhood without once complaining about having nothing to do. We often have storm outages in our area, and I lapsed into a standard routine of waiting it out with a book, not realizing that a Channel 4 helicopter was producing unsettling video footage less than a mile away. It was when the boys returned from a walk with the rumor of a complete water shutoff that I knew this wasn't a typical weather outage. One boy reported that his neighbor down by the Harpeth River had water in his house. I began to make plans to take the boys to Memphis, plans that lasted until I heard that not only was I-40 closed in both directions, our primary access road was flooded also. We were trapped without power and possibly without water for up to 3 days. I got out of the house to see what was going on, walking the short distance to the corner, then 50 feet to the next street. At that point, I found another line, a very sobering line. It was a mere 100 feet from my house, but thankfully 10 feet down. It was a contour line made of water, marking all the places in our neighborhood that were at the same height. On one side of that line were people like me, who would sleep in their beds as they had the night before, and on the other, neighbors of ours who would not. On Thursday, I spent some time at Chad Scobie's house on the riverbend, where the streets were lined with 10-foot heaps of their soggy guts, the open doors and windows of the houses behind like the holes in sorry-looking pumpkins. I'm writing this a week after the rain, well past midnight on Saturday night, and every 20 minutes or so, I hear the beep, beep, beep from a line of dumpster trucks backing away with the contents of someone's life up until last week. The sound goes on all night long. But the line that is most memorable is this, the line of cars driving into these neighborhoods all last week, clogging the sides of the roads, relatives, friends, and neighbors who came to help and to care and to perhaps guide their friends through the effects of a very different kind of baptism.
I can't top either of those, but the abrupt downpour that left hundreds of people homeless, troubled, and afraid could not have been more heartbreaking, but resulted in the city having an incredible sense of hope and community. Luckily, Vine Street only suffered a couple of inches of water in the basement, but many of the members of the church weren't so fortunate. Volunteers from all over Nashville have helped the ill-fated citizens from areas like Bellevue, whose homes were flooded up to their shoulders. Driving down Beach Bend Avenue, I saw the devastation the water brought to so many families, the water that we drink and need to sustain us. I felt as if I did not deserve to be spared, having nothing more happen to me than a swim meet being canceled. Why should my family be so lucky when so many others in exactly the same position as me had everything they owned taken away? I have put a number of hours into cleaning the church and helping Chad and Sarah Scobie, along with a handful of you who also helped their neighbors Scott and Amber, all of whom were extremely grateful. Metro schools are finally letting the kids back in school tomorrow, and downtown is improving. We can all continue donating clothes, food, money, and time to those who still need our help in gutting houses and cleaning messes. Let us pray that those who got the worst of this disaster will have enough strength and help to pull through.
I'm going to read this prepared, what I wrote, because if I don't, either I'll ramble or I'll cry through the whole thing, so bear with me. What a week it's been. It feels like it's been a month long. Thomas asked me if I would share my experience this week and why I responded and reacted the way I did. It may sound familiar to you, and you could just change a few of the details, names, and locations, and it will sum up your week as well. If your house did not take on water or was not completely destroyed, your story is one that those of us without water can't begin to imagine. I woke up last Sunday morning to the sound of continued pounding rain. I headed to our downstairs den, certain I would find water in my house. No water. Incredible, I thought, since it had been raining at this pace since Friday night, and the water was rushing down the hill straight for my house, which was acting like a dam for my neighbor. Shortly after my relief, I got a message on my phone from Thomas saying that church had been canceled due to the severe weather and the fact that there was no power. By late Sunday afternoon, the rain was starting to subside, so I decided to head out to see if I could grab a few groceries. While making my way to Kroger, I found Post Road closed, as well as Harding Pike. Closed because it was underwater. I made it to Kroger only to find that it was closed, along with all the businesses in the area because there was no power and the water was no less than 5 feet deep in, as far as I could see down Harding Pike. I thought I must be dreaming. This couldn't be my neighborhood. Monday, I got the news from Thomas and Hope that Houston Hall had flooded, and they, along with some Johnny-on-the-spot Vine Streeters, were bucketing out the water and needed help. I was already headed downtown and felt sad I couldn't help with the trouble at my church. I remember seeing Hope's statement that she and Bruce get credit for opening the doors to Houston Hall and smiling at her ability to make us feel better in a scary time. I don't think I slept more than an hour Monday night worrying about the people I was seeing on the footage from the helicopter. I had been so worried about those people and their homes that had been destroyed, then the realization that the animals were also in trouble came. To see the footage of two horses standing in water up to their necks with nowhere to go, I later learned they were able to be rescued to higher ground. Tuesday morning, the email started with one from Nina saying they had not heard from Nan, who lives in Bellevue, who thankfully also is located safe and sound. That email started the flow of emails about different members of our community who had been accounted for or were in need. At this point, I was starting to feel a lot of anxiety. I was not labeling in those terms. I thought I was just tired from the lack of sleep. I covered another deposition on Tuesday, but was feeling a strange pull that I can't explain. I didn't know what it was that I was supposed to do, however, other than pray for the people who had been affected. My life was going on, it seemed, as it had every other day, while people all around me were suffering and in need. I woke up Wednesday morning after another night of little sleep, but with that feeling of that same pull that I must do something and see if I could help somewhere. Then came the Vine Street update that Blake forwarded to me on my phone with another message from him saying, "Let's help Chad." As I read through the information, which included how people had been accounted for, how there was a need for a fan here or there, there was a part of this update that took my breath away. It was from Chad Scobie. It read, "Chad Scobie, if anybody in Nashville would like to spend their free time taking stuff from inside our house and tossing it into our front yard, Sarah and I could really use all the help we can get." It gave his phone number. My heart sank as I reread the words, "free time, tossing it into our front yard, and could really use some help." At that moment, I felt something, or should I say, someone whisper right in my ear, "Whom shall I send?" I stopped what I was doing, called Chad, asked his address, and headed over. Sarah and Chad's house was the only one on the street that had nothing in the front yard yet. All the other houses were well into the dismantling phase. I can't describe to you how bad it was when I walked in. Sarah was there by herself. Chad had gone to help another friend and to see about FEMA paperwork. It was overwhelming. Blake and I had already talked, and he was on his way from downtown. But I sent him a text and said it was much worse than I could have imagined and was glad he was on his way. Blake arrived and started to work. Not much time passed when we realized Chad didn't really need someone to come if they had free time to help toss things into his front yard. He needed all of us. Blake and Thomas talked, and Thomas learned that there was the immediate need at Chad and Sarah's house. After the call, a group of boys from Nashville Christian showed up and helped. Then, heaven sent, a group of five very muscular guys who showed up and proceeded to take out every appliance in the house, along with the kitchen cabinets. Hope collected a few teenagers, and they were on the scene very shortly. The list of Vine Streeters who heard the call, "Whom shall I send?" goes on and on. By the end of the next morning, the house had gone from nothing in the front yard to having the biggest pile in the neighborhood. The first phase was complete. On Thursday, I headed out to drive the truck for Mobile Loaves and Fishes. This is a local ministry headed up by Tulu Schuyler out of the South Hall next to Woodmont Christian. Tulu's organization is feeding everyone from the homeless to the waterworks employees who are working around the clock to keep us from running out of water. Yesterday, Saturday, several Vine Streeters, along with some help from Hope, lined up, along with some help that Hope lined up from a Louisville mission group, headed to Kathy and Jim's house to start the dismantling process. This time I decided to latch on to KK and be part of the food ministry that she had organized this week. While Vine Street was engaged in all the physical labor of the past few days, a small but powerful group led by KK fed no less than 700 people, barbecue, iced lemonade, and love. I saw ladies come out and hug KK for what she was doing for them. I stood and comforted an elderly lady who had just found her cat who had not made it. I ran into two friends from Harding Academy who were working on houses on Beach Bend who saw me and said, "Oh, you're with the church lady." We received countless thank yous and blessings. They were so glad to see us. I hope your week has been the same or similar in many ways, and you've found a way to help. If your life has not been interrupted personally by the water making its way into your home, that nagging feeling you're experiencing, that may be the same question I heard, "Whom shall I send?" You can answer.
Thank you, Savvy, and thank you, Jim. Now let's just take a few minutes. Just turn to those sitting next to you, kind of groups of 5 to 7 works well. And just talk about all this. Let's take a little time. Go ahead.